Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Thursday, July 28th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a new guide is out to help Colorado families find their niche in the great outdoors. We'll speak with the author in studio. And John Lindorf will be in to catch us up on local food news with Radio Nibbles. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines, then It's a Public Affair. Host Tish Buford will speak with relatives of the late Canadian hockey legend Herb Carnegie. Coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, we'll have the July installment of the Radio Book Club. Today, we hear from author Nina Shope speaking about her novel Asylum, which examines the real-life disturbing relationship between renowned 19th-century French neurologist Charcot and a young patient, Augustine, who had been diagnosed with the controversial disease of hysteria. Then at 9:30, Shauna Sprouls will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first, these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Christian Garibay.
Thunderstorms are forecast for the Denver metro area and surrounding counties today. A flash flood watch is in effect for the Cameron Peak, Cowood, East Troublesome, and Williams Fork Burnscar area starting at 11 a.m. Heavy rainfall is expected to last for the evening in much of the state, including the foothills, mountains, eastern plains, and I-25 corridor. On Wednesday, residents of the Front Range received flash flood warnings when rainstorms pushed through the area. Afternoon and late-night thunderstorms brought more than an inch of rain, with some parts of the Front Range even seeing 2 inches of rain. Boulder Office of Emergency Management advises residents to immediately head towards higher ground and avoid driving and walking through floodwaters if high levels of water are in their area. The Colorado River Outfitters Association announced families can expect steady waters and fun runs for the rest of the rafting season. These open rivers include Western Slope, Clear Creek, Poudre River, Taylor River, and Arkansas River. The Colorado River is currently increasing in flow due to releases from reservoirs. Forecasts could change depending on rainfall. Jefferson County Public Schools has ratified a contract to support paraprofessionals. Luis Licon has more.
Support staff at Jefferson County Public Schools can expect a significant pay increase in 2023. That's thanks to an agreement ratified this week by the Jefferson County Public School Board of Education. The new contract agreement involved months of negotiations and included an increase in starting pay to $18 an hour for support staff and more sick leave and healthier food options for students. The school board committed to providing healthier foods for students and better engagement with parents. JESPA represents almost 3,800 educators, secretaries, bus drivers, food workers, and custodians. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Employees at the Boulder location of Trader Joe's are seeking to unionize. United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7 filed a petition this week to hold an election, making workers at the Boulder Trader Joe's the first in the state to consider unionization. The United Food and Commercial Workers Local 7 is the same union that organized a successful strike at King Soopers locations in the Denver metro area earlier this year. The union represents more than 17,000 grocery workers across Colorado and Wyoming. The eastbound lanes of US 6 from Jefferson County Line to Tunnel 2 were temporarily closed after a rock climber fell and got stuck on a high rock ledge over Clear Creek. Both the West Metro Fire Rescue and the Golden Fire Department worked together to close the lanes and help. The climber was safely rescued and did not sustain any life-threatening injuries, but still had minor ones. According to the Colorado Department of Transportation, the road was opened back up around 2 p.m. yesterday. The oldest known Holocaust survivor in Colorado passed away in Loveland on Friday. Joe Rubinstein spent 5 years of his life as a slave in concentration camps, a story that was eventually turned into the novel Auschwitz No. 34207, The Joe Rubinstein Story. He spent the rest of his life as a shoe designer and was said to have always been looking for joy in his life. He was 101 years old. Thornton has found levels of dangerous PFAS in their water. KGNU's Jimmy Searfaw says more.
Letters are being sent out to Thornton residents warning them about PFAS chemicals being found in their water. PFAS are chemicals that have been linked to diseases such as thyroid disease and some cancers. They're known as forever chemicals and can be found in various day-to-day items such as clothing and cookware. Thornton's PFAS levels coming out of the plants are 5.4 parts per trillion. The Environmental Protection Agency has set the acceptable levels for PFAS in drinking water at 70 parts per trillion. The city has taken steps to combat this by turning off one of its well water sources. For residents, the city recommends purchasing an in-home water filtration system that can get rid of PFAS chemicals. The city has also reassured citizens that the drinking water is safe and meets all federal and state primary drinking standards. This has been Jimmy Searfoss for KGNU.
Expect cloudy weather and mildly warm temperatures all throughout the Front Range today, as later there will be a high chance of thunderstorms. In Boulder, a high of 72 and a low of 60. In Denver, a high of 72 and a low of 62. In Fort Collins, a high of 73 and a low of 60. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Colorado is known for its outdoors recreation, from skiing and snowboarding in the winter to water sports and hiking in the warmer months. And while outdoors recreation does attract tourism, enthusiasm runs especially high among locals. But sometimes finding family-friendly outdoors activities requires an additional bit of research. Well, there's a guide for that now. And the author is with me live in the studio. Good morning. Longmont-based author Heather Munt has put together the Colorado Family Outdoor Adventure Guide. She'll be presenting it this evening at the Boulder Bookstore. Good morning, Heather, and thank you for coming into the studio.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, what motivated you to compile this guide?
I started writing about family travel and about 2014, when my kids were around six and eight, just because we'd gone a lot to a lot of places and I wanted to start writing. And I started writing for Outdoor Families magazine, and I created a lot of Colorado content for that. So University of New Mexico Press approached me 3 years ago and said, would you want to write this guide? And I submitted a proposal, and three years later, here we are.
So you already had some of the legwork done in magazine-style reporting, but how long did it take you to compile an actual book? It's very much like a standard guidebook. It's easy to flip through. It's divided into regions. It requires a significant amount of organization and travel and research. So how long did this take?
The actual doing the trips probably started when I started Momfari in 2014. So we'd taken a fair amount of the trips on our own, so I'd already had that. Once I got the guidebook assignment, we drove between 2020 and 2021. We probably, between family travel and just on my own, I probably drove around 8,000 miles in the state, which I had to like check my facts in my head. Did I really drive that much in Colorado? But I did. And you know, there are some things in there I just had to write about and try to fact check over the phone. You just can't do it all. But I've done a fair amount of it. And as I mentioned in the intro, it's all stuff that I would do with my kids if I haven't already.
Well, and a little thing known as the global pandemic occurred in those 3 years as well. It seems particularly suitable that you were able to do outdoor research. But did this turn into a full-time job for you and your family?
It was definitely a full-time job for me. And to be honest, it was both comforting to have a project like this during such a crazy time, but it also felt very silly to be writing a guidebook when it felt like the world was falling very fast. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot of work. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I'm so proud of it, and I hope it's all right. I tried my best. But it was a lot of work. I don't know if my family could handle me doing another book.
Well, and then I assume they had to go along for the ride. I mean, a lot of the photos in here, I mean, your husband took the photos. Mm-hmm. You have even your dog is in the book with you.
My huskies. Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of it on our own before I knew I was even going to be writing about anything. Like the pictures are from when I started Momfari in 2014, when they were 6 and 8 to I think as late as 2020. So, you know, they've grown up in this book. It's like a documentation of kind of the family stuff that we've done together. that had nothing to do with writing a book, to be honest. I mean, we just like to get outside, and that's what my husband and I did before we had kids. He's also a native of Colorado, and you know, we're not the most outdoorsy people you'll ever meet, but we really like being outdoors, and it just naturally progressed when we had children.
Okay, so you've mentioned something a couple of times at this point, which I think it's worth digging into a bit more. Momfari, what is that?
It's a website I just started because people kept asking about the trips that we were taking with the kids. So in 2014, I started Momfari. Was a just something to kind of keep my brain fresh. I really missed writing. I've always loved freelance writing. I loved editing, and I felt like I was missing that. And then once Colin, my younger son, went into kindergarten, it felt like, okay, well, maybe I should just get back into writing. And I just kind of fell into it. And then shortly after, started writing for Outdoor Families magazine, for which I'm grateful because that work is what got me this guidebook project. So I just kind of fell back into it. It's just something I love to do. I'm really passionate about getting families outside in whatever capacity they can.
Well, something that I appreciate about the book is that you say upfront that you're not this super outdoorsy family, which, you know, frankly, moving to Colorado, it can be kind of intimidating because there's some people where it's like, wow, you've got all the gear. You like to put on shorts and go running in the snow. And you're like, your kids are triathletes. Like, it's really, really intimidating. So talk a bit about making these activities accessible.
Yeah, I feel very strongly that it doesn't have to be intimidating for families to get outside. I was just with a group of women from Wildkind, and they are the most amazing women who go outside all the time. It's with their little kids. And I admire that so much. They're hut tripping. They're, you know, cross-country skiing. They're camping. And that just was never anything I aspired to do. I just wanted to get my kids outside. And I feel very strongly that, you know, if you're a backpacking expert, fantastic. I think you should do that with your kids. But if you just want to get outside, it's really easy to do, and you don't have to buy all the gear. More power to you if that's what you want to do. I have no judgment in that. But I do think people get overwhelmed really easily, and you're already raising humans. Like, does it get more overwhelming than that? Do you need to think about, what do I have to do to get outside? Just go outside. And then, you know, if you want to do a little bit more, I've done the legwork. If you want to go see some really cool places, then just grab my book and get in the car.
And okay, so for example, another thing that makes these access to the outdoors, even though it's right outside, it's right there, you would think that it's kind of easily accessible. Well, there's a lot of cost involved as well. So what are some of the places that you would highlight as particularly accessible, either that they're well linked to public transportation or that they are inexpensive?
I would say, you know, the transportation thing is such a difficult thing in Colorado because we have such wide open spaces. So that's a barrier that most people have to get over. However, I don't think you have to spend a lot of money. Our state parks are phenomenal. I feel like they're a great entry level into, you know, if you want a car camp, great. If you want a glamp, there's probably some option for you, like a yurt or a cabin of some sort. They're near beautiful spaces. They're not expensive to get into. You don't have to have a whole lot of gear except maybe a tent, some sleeping bags. So I feel like if you really want to dedicate the time and energy and money, you can do that. And state parks are a phenomenal way to do that. We have such a beautiful state. I believe at last count with Fisher Peak, we have 42 state parks with actual full amenities for people to go into.
And I'm just curious. I mean, I'm sure that there are, of course, in this guidebook, the very famous, famous locations.
Of course.
What are some of the hidden gems that you found along the way?
No question. Eastern Colorado and Southeast Colorado. Southeast Colorado, late August, early September is when the tarantulas come out. Picket Wire Canyon in Comanche National Grassland is such a beautiful area that most Coloradans haven't seen unless you live there. And then Bent's Old Fort in eastern Colorado is one of the most phenomenal national park properties I've ever visited. It's a recreated fort of William Bent's fort along the Santa Fe Trail, and it's phenomenal.
Well, you can hear more about this evening at the Boulder Bookstore. What time is your presentation?
6:30.
Okay. Heather Munt is our guest today. She will be presenting her book, Colorado Family Outdoor Adventure, this evening at 6:30 at the Boulder Bookstore. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. Up next is Radio Nibbles.
In In her new novel, Asylum, author Nina Shoup looks at the controversial diagnosis of hysteria, often given to women and popular during the 19th century.
I mean, obviously with the Supreme Court ruling and stuff, it's become more relevant than I expected, and which is very depressing because a lot of the book is about this idea that, you know, women weren't trusted to have autonomy over their own bodies. And there's this deep suspicion that dates back to ancient Greece about the womb being this irrational, uncontrollable, excessive organ that, you know, somehow makes women unable to live their own lives without being controlled by a man. Obviously, that is not that far from where we are now.
Tune in this Thursday at 9 o'clock to hear Nina Shoup talk about her new book, Asylum. It's on the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. That's this Thursday at 9 a.m.
You know what that music means. It's time for Radio Nibbles with John Lindorf. He is here in the studio with a guest that many of you know on this program already. Good morning, John.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to around the great KGNU tapas table. And I do have a special guest this morning. I think you know the voice of Rosanna Longo better. She's the bilingual reporter and producer for KGNU, and normally she's talking about significant local issues, but I discovered that Rosanna has a secret food past and passion, and we're here to talk about ceviche.
We're here to talk about ceviche. Thank you so much, John, for inviting me to your show. I feel really honored because you normally bring a lot of chefs and restaurant owners to speak about their recipes. And I feel honored that you're asking me about my ceviche recipe. Well, I can tell you that my ceviche recipe really comes from homemade and traditional food.
So where are you from? I'm not sure everyone knows.
I am originally from Ecuador.
When was the first time you remember tasting ceviche?
I remember tasting ceviche the first time of my, you know, I'm pretty sure I tasted when I was little. But the first time I remember saying, oh my gosh, this is the best ceviche ever, was in front of the ocean, sitting at a, you know, restaurant with the ocean in front of me, palms all around, and the smell of coconut. And why? Because this ceviche had this unique taste of coconut juice.
Let's help the listeners here define what ceviche is, although there are many versions of it.
I was just telling you before coming into the studio that the reality is that a lot of countries in Latin America fight saying that they have the best ceviche recipe ever.
But what is it?
What it really is basically seafood, because it could be fish, but also shrimp and other different delicious seafood, you know, wonderful tasting seafood things put together with mainly lemon juice, lime juice, onions, cilantro,
and chiles and
red peppers.
And the thing, yes, you put in raw fish, although you
and in this particular ceviche that I was telling you.
But those acids, those juices cook, in effect, cook the fish.
You know, the key is this. When we talk about this particular ceviche or this food in Latin America, it really takes time. So homemade food takes time. If you want to make ceviche, you have to prepare the night before. Why? Because you want to make sure that fish is cooked completely. And you put lemon and it's going to sit there and it's going to simmer and it's going to be cooked. But you also can do shrimp and you can do other things. Like I have done because of Boulder, because living here in Boulder 20 years, I have had to adapt. And I have even done ceviche with chicken and avocado or vegetarian one with, you know, different things.
And if you go to various Mexican and Central American restaurants, you'll often see ceviche on the menu. But in many, it's different. And, you know, and it's not like poke from Hawaii, which is another, you know, raw dish that starts out with raw fish, but that doesn't get cooked.
And this one is particular because it gets cooked in the lemon juice, in the lime juice, and in the recipe that I hold, because it's a family recipe, we put orange juice, lemon juice, and the key is this, the onion needs to be also marinated and seared in a different way. Because that way, when you kind of cook that onion in salt and sugar, and then you pass it to the lemons, the texture of that onion is going to be super particular.
Not crunchy, but not wimpy either.
Not exactly, like just right. Just right.
does it matter what kind of fish do you tend to use?
Well, you can use any white fish. I suggest, you know, tilapia, because that comes from Ecuador. Right. but I was telling you, we can also use... So the base is this juice, but the key is to start with the onions.
And very fresh fish.
Mm-hmm. Very fresh. At the end, you put cilantro.
In an ideal world, you use sushi grade.
Mm-hmm.
You
know. And a little bit olive oil. Why not? Mm-hmm. And then, if you want to make sure that it's not, you know, it needs to be tangy and juicy and sweet, salty, just perfect. So, yeah, you have to try it a little bit and let it sit. So if I'm going to have guests, and this is particularly beautiful to have it in the summer days, because you can have ceviche as the entry, el bocadito, you know, the first thing that you have and you serve, and you have it with a beer, super cold beer.
Do you serve it with crackers or tortilla chips?
Well, that is the key. Yeah, I think that every country, you know, from Peru to all the way down to Tierra del Fuego in Chile, they are going to say, no, the proper one, you need to serve it with this or that. In Ecuador, because we have so many plantains, we do plantain chips and also corn that is cooked and salty and, you know, really crunchy.
Like so, the big kernels?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those ones, giant corn.
The giant ones.
Right, that's where that comes from, folks.
Yeah. You take me over there, and I'm just dreaming about having them right now.
but it really is it's the perfect summer dish.
It's the perfect summer dish.
And even if you make it and have it 2 days later, it still can be wonderful, you know.
Yeah, I think that 2 days it can hold easily. Right. But the beautiful thing about ceviche that I wanted to bring to our listeners is that it is really a fusion or a mix of cultures, is this hybrid way of bringing what is there in your country that is fresh and delicious, and then mix it with what is also available. So it's almost like you're bringing different cultures together. The you know, natives living in Ecuador bringing the ways they used to cook and everything, and then the Spaniards also bringing, you know, other spices.
But then
so you have a lot of cumin in the ceviche too.
Well, and here you are, Rosanna. You brought ceviche to America.
I am, and I gave it away. I gave away my recipe many times because I used to exchange roots.
Right.
For ceviche.
Right, but in like you said, in bringing it here, you had to adapt to the available ingredients, and you may have found some flavors, you know, whether they're green chilies or other things that are local that make a great Boulder County ceviche.
Let me tell you, Boulder County ceviche, it's easy. You just have to put some garbanzo or sweet peas and then add avocado, cilantro to the same recipe of the onion, saute or soften in lime juice and orange juice, and you can have it. But the chicken and avocado, let me tell you, that's a famous one.
Right, but you got to cook the chicken first.
Of course. Yeah. You have to cook, and you have to cook the shrimp too.
Right.
So it's very particular, but it's very beautiful.
There's also some incredible vegan and vegetarian ceviches. You know, you can make the vegetable equivalent, you know, by using the same sauce, but, you know. And I was
that
interested,
interesting.
I mean, I think of ceviche as a appetizer, you know, that you eat piece by piece. But you're saying in Ecuador, it looks more like a soup. And I assume you drink you eat the liquid that's in.
Because you marinate it with the orange juice and the lemon juice, it's more like a soup. It is true. And you know, and then you get the chance to put all these plantain chips and all the corn, so it's delicious. That's the way, you know, we are used to doing it.
Is there anything you want to add before we round
things up? Something that is a little similar for me is like going to Guajos and having the taco, fish taco. That tastes a little bit like the Mexican ceviche, I will say, but in a taco.
And that's, as we say, Guapos. The one up north in Boulder, the restaurant had a little kitchen fire, so they're closed. But the other one down south is open. But yeah, that's, and so I encourage you to taste around. Hey, what's the best thing you've, well, and that's literally, I was going to say, what's the best thing you've tasted lately? And that's it.
Well, I go crazy with those fish tacos, but also ice cream. I think the combination of ice cream is delicious. I was able to find ice cream from, you know, yummy ice cream, avocado ice cream, finally.
And, thank you, Rosanna, for coming in and talking about ceviche. We'll be back next week.
Thank you for having me.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to everyone who contributed. Stay tuned for a public affair right after these news headlines from the BBC.